fiddling herbs with you. We got another couple hours here before the Warriors start up. We're going to get into a little hot stove here in about 15 minutes. Kerry Crowley from Bay Area News Group. We're going to talk Giants. We're also in that segment going to talk about the even more significant moves that the Oakland A's have made. But, Herbs, I just want to get back because we hadn't discussed it yet. The comment I read that Mark Cuban had to say, and of course that last line, I think if he hadn't said the last line, it wouldn't have been a big deal. And the last line he said to the owner of the Mavericks, they just learn how to play basketball while our guys learn how to taunt and put together mixtapes.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you and I made mixtapes in the 80s. They don't make mixtapes anymore. So it just shows that's a little bit out of touch.
Well, and also as it relates to basketball, mixtapes are, you know, it's a different animal. Mixtapes to us is straight up musical, but you see, you can go online and Google Zion Williamson mixtape, right? And you'll just get a big package of highlights of Zion.
This is something that our good friend, the Black Falcon, Harrison Barnes, and
Senator Harry.
Mark Spear said about him is so true. I always said, if you have a daughter, that's the kind of guy that you want your daughter to marry. I mean, Harrison Barnes is just as solid a person. Forget his talent. I mean, he's just a solid gentleman that you're ever going to meet.
That's why I was thinking when he entered free agency, and some people were saying, well, he's not going to get this, he's not going to get that. I thought, hey, if he gets in front of the owner, the owner's going to fall in love with him and overpay him, probably.
No doubt. This is what Harrison Barnes, of course, who plays for the Mavericks, had to say about Mark Cuban's statement. Quote, as a statement, I don't agree with it. As a joke, I don't find it funny. And frankly, I think it doesn't reflect what makes the NBA special. The great thing about our league is that players come from all over the world. We are raised in every background imaginable and bring unique perspectives because of it. We should celebrate that. We bring those perspectives on each other, on issues in our communities, and we aren't afraid to learn from and share those perspectives. That's our strength. End quote.
And that's one of, you know, LeBron, I think it was LeBron, the issue came up this week about the freedom that NBA players seem to have to express themselves. And I'm pretty sure it was LeBron, but I'm not positive. But they were just talking about that's why they appreciate Adam Silver so much, is because, you know, and I guess the conversation is somehow tied to the anthem controversy that devoured the NFL all last season. And, you know, the unspoken was clearly Goodell doesn't care what the players think. He doesn't have conversations with them. He's in the owner's suite. He's clearly in the owner's camp, at least from the player's perspective. So, yeah, I mean, Harrison is right. That's what makes the NBA so cool, because it's the guys can speak out. And look, Durant, Steph, LeBron, Kyrie Irving, these guys have said some things publicly that, you know, when you hear it, you're like, ooh, that could cause some problems. And it doesn't cause problems because it's the NBA and you're allowed to actually speak your mind.
And I understand what Cuban's getting at if you read between the lines.
Sure.
And he's talking about, like, in Europe, when you're a soccer player, you can get signed at 8 years old to go to the academy.
Right.
And I've said before many times, the worst thing for USA Soccer is guys going to play in college. That's 4 years wasted playing against guys like me. You're just wasting your time.
Right.
But it's hard to get a work permit to go overseas. But if we sent our 12-year-olds to La Masia in Barcelona or to the Ajax school, whatever, any kind of...
Didn't Freddie Adu go over there real young age?
Freddie Adu was 16, yeah, okay. And he ended up in Greece. He got a little bit... He signed with MLS, and he got a little bit too hyped up
too
as
much
a young
too
kid.
Soon.
Yeah. But I think about Jovan Karofsky, John O'Brien, guys like that who... You got to be a soccer guy to know those names. But so I understand what he's getting at. That, yeah, it would be better. But the other thing, too, is you do want to have a life, right? And we don't want Greg Jeffrey's dad or Marv Marinovich. We don't want one of these robo-dads. So do you really want your kid at 12 years old to eat, sleep, and think basketball 24/7? And I know we have these travel teams for every sport now, you know, from girls volleyball to boys baseball to soccer. It doesn't matter. It's like you have to play travel team, which is... I think robs kids of playing other sports.
Well, it prices a lot of kids out, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm friends with a family whose daughter is a good but not great athlete. In basketball, she was not good. She wasn't bad, but she wasn't what I would say should be an AAU caliber player, right? When you think, oh, he or she plays AAU, you immediately think that's an advanced league. She must be pretty good. Well, she wasn't, and she never played, but she made the team because they knew that her parents could pay these exorbitant fees. They needed bodies because a lot of the kids that were kind of on the bubble of being, are you really good? Or are you just okay? You know, the ones that are like, they feel like they should be starting, but they're coming off the bench. Even those players are hard to get stick around. They're going to go try to find somewhere else. But you need to fill the bench. You need to have bodies in practice. And the conversation was very brief. I'm not going to play your daughter hardly at all. She's going to be a practice player. Do you still want her to play? And because travel ball has that magic, you know, aura about it. Oh, scouts, you're going to be seen by more scouts, college coaches, which is a crock. Doesn't matter who you are, where you are. If you're great, they will find you. But they paid a ton of money. She got very little playing time, and it was a waste of a summer for her.
That's too bad. It's bad for your muscle memory and your footwork, too, I think, if you just do. Well, I remember having a conversation with Cal Ripken. His favorite sport he played in high school was soccer, and he said it meant so much to his footwork as a shortstop.
Sure.
I want to get to the other thing we were talking about and the issue of the day with the Warriors is Clay's quote-unquote slump. Look, I know the percentages are down. I would love to score 22 points per game and be in a slump. Let me just remind everybody, he's scoring 22 points per game on average. So,
and Clay's always been pretty streaky.
Well, this is the thing. There are certain people. It's like in baseball. If Carney Lafford's in a slump, you let him hit his way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If Eric Sogard's in a slump, you put him on the bench.
Right.
And you make him think
or
about
send
it.
Send him to Sacramento.
Yeah, and take extra BP, you know? Have some pepper games, even if it says no pepper games.
Mm-hmm.
With Klay Thompson, because some people say, look, he needs a rest. I don't think so. I think you let a shooter shoot himself
out
of a slump.
Absolutely.
And plus, he's not killing you. He's playing great. Look what he did to Donovan Mitchell the other night. He's playing great defense. And let me say it for the third time. He's scoring you 22 points per game. If that's a slump, I'll take his slump.
And what do you always hear about, okay, when a shooter's in a slump, how does he get out of it? He shoots. Mm-hmm. And look, Clay is going to jack shots. He's never going to – he didn't take the court thinking, oh, my God, I'm slumping. I better be selective and only take really great shots.
Yeah, I hope he's not thinking that.
He's not. He has no conscience. That's part of the beauty of Clay. And he will shoot himself out of it. He will.
Even off the court, he has no conscience. He runs over people in the street.
Him and Rocco, that's it.
Well, that's the thing, too, I love about Clay. And I'm with you because he does play it very close to the vest. And he's another guy with a tremendous sense of humor.
Yeah.
If you listen
very
to him.
Very dry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very droll sense of humor as well. But I'm not worried about Clay Thompson. Now, the timing in a walk year probably isn't great. But he has built up enough equity in game that he's not going to lose any money from any kind of perceived slump right now. I think it's just we're just so used to excellence.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect like 50% from three-point land. And it's just, you know, that's too much to ask. But this is what we expect. And so I think the people who are wondering what's going on with Clay, sometimes you're just a little bit cold. And he's not Markel Fultz, where he has to reinvent a new shot and put on virtual reality like that poor kid.
Right.
He's not that bad right now.
Well, he's never that bad. I mean, like I said, he's been a streaky shooter. You know, to the extreme in both ways. Obviously, the 37-point quarter was in the 60-point game. That was the extreme on the good side. And he's going to have games where he's off. The interesting thing, though, is I feel like with Clay, I can tell if it's going in or not as soon as he releases. Because when he gets he has this incredible innate ability to square his shoulders. Even if he's jumping and his momentum is going in the opposite direction, he can make that adjustment in midair and square his shoulders, but he needs space. When you see him kind of try to get a shot off before the guy, somebody's closing out on him, he's one of those guys that I do think is affected by a good hard closeout. I think he rushes himself.
That's Michael Urban. I'm Rick Tittle. We will come back from a quick break and we'll talk a little hot stove. We'll talk a little orange and black and a little green and gold. So join us and let's talk a little baseball on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Urban and Tittle.
Thank you so much for joining us. Hope you're having a nice Sunday afternoon wherever you are. Rick Tittle, that's me. Michael Urban, that's him to my right. Here in downtown San Francisco, 95.7 The Game, taking your calls and texts. As we have the topic of sport, 888-957-9570. Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Good for ball, bad for ball, and Michael Urban Staple will be at 3:30. We'll talk a little hot stove, and let's start off with the Giants. And we're very happy to be joined by Kerry Crowley, who covers the Giants for the Bay Area News Group. And I'm just, there are a lot of places where we can sort of dive in on this, and I'm going to go ahead and jump into the outfield at AT&T Park, and hopefully I won't bump into any Oakland Raiders out there. But right now, I'm looking at an outfield, and correct me if I'm wrong, of Shaw in left, Duggar in center, and Williamson in right. What the hell is going on right now?
At this point, I think that you wouldn't even be able to pencil Shaw and Williamson in for sure. The only thing that we really know about this team right now is Steven Duggar in center field, and it seems like they might be content to go into spring training with a few question marks in the outfield or at least some open competitions, and I don't think that that's what fans expected coming into the offseason.
Now, I like Alan Hansen. He always seems to do something when I watch the Giants, and, you know, a guy who hits around 250, a little pop. We know he's an infielder, but maybe spring training, play him a lot in the outfield? What do you think?
I'm certain he'll get a lot of looks in spring training in left field and potentially even right field as well, because Hansen has something that not many Giants players really in the past 5 to 10 years have had at all, and that's speed. And he brings that element to the game. He's multi-positional. He can play second, third, a little bit of shortstop, and left field. So he's someone that you can kind of plug in and play at various spots and, you know, employ him in different ways during the game. And that's big for the Giants because they don't have a lot of versatile weapons, and Hansen is one of those few guys who can do a lot.
Hey, so Hunter Strickland's gone. He's been gone for a while. This is not new news. But the fact that they have Dyson still, they're pretty comparable statistically, so it would suggest that this move was made for reasons beyond baseball. Maybe baseball was a big part of it, and this other one just pushed him over the edge. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think the whole, I mean, he's drawn some unwanted attention to himself and the franchise during his short time?
I just think that Dyson has something that Strickland doesn't, and that's a fastball that sinks. Strickland had a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, but when you've got Ray Black, when you've got Reyes Maranta, and now they've added Melvin Adon to the 40-man roster, they've got three other guys who can throw 100 who do what Strickland does. And Sam Dyson's a guy who can pitch almost every other day, and he's got much more life to his fastball than Strickland. So I think that's what the choice came down to, is they just didn't really have a need for another guy like Strickland who was out of options and was going to clog up a spot in that bullpen.
All right, so if we look at the rotation, and we don't know what Farahan's going to do, but as we stand here just before Christmas, obviously Mad Bum is your ace, and then a collection of Derek Rodriguez, Andrew Suarez, Chris Stratton, Jeff Samardzija supposed to be healthy at some point. How do you look right now? I mean, now we're hearing that Holland may be back to the Rangers. How's the rotation settling for you?
It's going to be really interesting to see what they do with the rotation, because we've started to see some names come off the market that you'd think that the Giants would be interested in. And so Holland's a guy who they certainly were open to bringing back at the beginning of the offseason, but they're not sure how that would work out right now. And when you get past Bumgarner, there's not really anyone who you feel comfortable saying we can pencil that guy in for 200 innings. And so what I think we'll see a lot of is cycling through starters this year and potentially 8, 9, 10 guys being in the mix in spring training for spots. Sean Anderson, the top pitching prospect in the organization, will fit in there. They'll hope for a bounce back year from Tyler Beattie, who will probably start the year at AAA, but they will end up counting on Rodriguez and Suarez a lot, in my opinion.
Okay, so given the uncertainty in the rotation, they've addressed a couple of things in the bullpen. They just added Vendetti, the guy who throws from both sides. It feels an awful lot, Kerry, like we're going to see some openers from the Giants next season. What do you think of that?
I absolutely think that we could see that, because you're going to have guys who are young in that rotation, who haven't thrown a whole lot of innings, and kind of one of the best ways to shield them is to prevent them from seeing guys at the top of the order three times through. So if you want to maximize their five innings, you bring those guys like Suarez or Rodriguez or Stratton or even Ty Block in the second, and you come up with a Ray Black or a Reyes Maranta firing heat in the first inning. And I think that it's absolutely something that we'll see. And maybe Venditti is a guy who opens games for them next year. But it's an alternative pitching strategy that Bruce Bochy was not so keen on last year. But I think when he looks at the makeup of his current staff and realizes it's a whole lot different than the arms he had on this roster in 2010, 2012, and 2014.
Just please tell me they're not trying to sign Liam Hendricks.
I don't think so. I think Hendricks went back to the A's. So
no, I think the A's brag about Hendricks.
Yeah, exactly. So, but maybe Sergio Romo would be open to a reunion. He was the original opener in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, he actually had a pretty good year. Tittle and Urban with Kerry Crowley, Bay Area News Group covers the Giants. Couple more questions for Kerry. A little wild card here that people might not have notice when they were doing their holiday shopping is that in the Rule 5 draft, Drew Ferguson came over from the Astros. And this is a guy who has absolutely raked in the minor leagues. He's 26 years old. Of course, the Astros are loaded in their system and their big league club. There's just no space for him. They had to leave him unprotected. I know some people have said, oh, he's 26 years old. He would have made the roster by now, but what a fantastic opportunity for an outfielder. And of course, being a Rule 5 guy, he's going to get every chance to stick, right?
Yeah, he'll have every chance to stick. And it really would not surprise me if he was on the team all season next year, because they need guys who have positional versatility in the outfield. And Ferguson played all three positions in the Astros organization. So if you can make him an option in center field when you want to rest Steven Duggar against left-handed pitchers, you can throw Ferguson in there on other days when you're at home at AT&T Park or some of the bigger outfields in the National League West that the Giants have had trouble covering defensively, like Coors Field. You throw Ferguson in right, and then you've got two guys in the outfield who have center field potential, and the defense really picks up. And he's another guy who could potentially hit at the top of the order for them because he does have speed as well.
Kerry, as a former beat writer, I know that you kind of have to pick your battles in the offseason in terms of how often you tap into your sources in the front office, let's say. You don't want to be bugging them every single day, but I'm sure you are in some sort of regular contact. Have you heard any, even if they're just whispers, of teams calling about Madison Bumgarner? Because that going into the winter meetings, that wasn't just a local story. I mean, they were talking about it nationally, that the Giants might be open to trading Madison Bumgarner. But has there been any fire whatsoever following that smoke?
Well, I know that they have fielded calls on Bumgarner and gauged the interest level around the league, especially from teams who could be in contention and looking for a starter with 1 year and under contract and a guy who could pitch in the playoffs. Teams are not yet willing to meet the Giants' asking price for him, but I do believe that they've probably set an asking price internally, and that if the right situation materialized where they could unload Bumgarner and get a package of prospects back, including a starting pitcher who could be in that rotation and anchor it for 5 to 6 years, I think that they would be willing to do that. Would it happen to happen in January? I'm not so sure. They might have a better opportunity of finding the right deal in July.
One of my favorite names on the team, Abiatel Avellino. And this guy came over in the McCutchen trade late. The Giants called him up in September, an infielder who can play all three positions except first. A guy known for his glove, but actually hit very well between AA and AAA. I know that, Alan Hansen is ahead of him in the pecking order as utility infielder, but just 23 years old, and will get his first spring under the Giants' tutelage. What do you think?
I really like Avellino, and so does Bruce Bochy. He was really surprised by Avellino's demeanor and how well he took to the clubhouse, and really a role in September last year where he wasn't playing at all. He was just sitting there and learning every day, and kind of had to be that first one out on the field for coaching points, for batting practice, for fielding practice. And Avellino really embraced it, and the Giants love that mentality. They think that he's a guy who can fill in all over, kind of like Alan Hansen. They like that he's a right-handed bat as opposed to Hansen, who's a switch hitter, but much better from the left side. And so you'll probably see a situation where he's giving Joe Panik and Brandon Crawford days off next year because they really like his talent, and they like just the kind of chemistry that he adds to the clubhouse and what he's been able to do in the short time that he was there.
Hey, Kerry, how's Buster's recovery coming? You reported that previously undiagnosed microfracture in his hip that was preventing him from firing properly. Assuming that's fixed now, what does that mean for him?
They think that he'll be fine come spring training, and they're going to be very cautious. But everything's gone great to this point. They really won't know, though, until January when he ramps everything up from a baseball activity standpoint and starts running a whole lot more. They won't know what that's like. So Bruce Bochy has said he'd like Buster to catch, you know, 110, 120 games, kind of like he has in the past. I'm not so sure that Farhan Zaidi would be on board with that that number specifically. I think they'll probably look for anywhere from 85 to 100 games where Buster's the starting catcher, and then try to bring in someone who's versatile and can play a few positions, including catcher, to back him up.
Are you going to miss Yasiel Puig as much as I am? Yasiel Puig is my friend.
Where the Giants just hate Yasiel Puig. Mm. So it's down to 7 next year. And it's so entertaining when they match up, when you got a Bumgarner, Puig.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
You know, stuff was always bound to happen.
One final question for you, Kerry. I know that Dave Dombrowski came out and basically said, you know, why don't we have a winter trade deadline? He's like, every other sport has it in their off season. What are your thoughts?
I am all on board on that. The sitting by the phone for 3 months and, and, you know, seeing if you're going to make it ring or people coming and calling you is tough. I think that they should set a deadline and stick with that. I'm on board all the way.
That's Kerry Crowley, covers the Giants for the Bay Area News Group. You can follow him on Twitter at @KO_Crowley. Kerry, thanks for your time. Happy holidays, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Kerry.
Appreciate it. Have a good one, guys.
All right. If you have comments about the Giants offseason, it's 888-957-9570. Chilton Auto Body, text line 95795. So, Herb, let's turn our attention over to the Green and Gold, who have been much more active. And it's funny how I remember the Giants last offseason, that there were these catchphrases of, young and athletic, mm-hmm. and they got Evan Longoria. Evan Longoria is a tremendous baseball player when he's going well. You don't just want young and athletic, you want good baseball players. But yeah, it's nice to be young and athletic. And to me, with them wishy-washy on Panic, I thought Profar would have been a good fit over there.
Yeah, I agree.
So Jerks and Profar, when you think about, yeah, the A's gave up Eli White, who I like. I saw him play in Stockton, but his path is blocked by Semien and Mateo. He wasn't going to make the team. A 38th pick. It was the only pick you can trade. I'm not worried about that. And I think we're having a party about Emilio Pagan. He's a nice guy, but he's just, the gopher balls were incredible.
I'm sorry. What do you mean about there's some sort of limit on? I'm sorry.
You cannot trade draft picks in baseball. You just can't.
Right, but why the 38th?
Because it was a competitive balance pick. And you can trade that. It's a sandwich pick that you got.
Oh, okay. It's compensatory pick.
Well, you're not even compensatory. It's competitive balance. It's like you get compensatory picks for losing free agents, right. And then you get these other ones, these competitive balance picks.
Wow.
Yeah. So they dealt that, and then it's a three-way trade. But Jurickson Profar comes in, which means no more Judd Lowry, obviously.
He's younger and athletic.
He is. He had his only health. Remember, he was the number one prospect in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that kid, Ott, that was also at Texas? Those two guys were going to rule the American League. He had his only really full, healthy season last year, and he did pretty well. And I think he's sort of like D. Gordon Light, if you don't mind me making the comparison. And I think the only thing is, it's like, well, what happens to Franklin Barreto? Well, Barreto's right-handed. He's not a switch hitter, so he wasn't as versatile. And Barreto in his time never really grabbed the opportunity with both hands.
Right.
So they're going to try to make him a fourth outfielder now. So let's just talk about first the Profar trade. Your thoughts?
Well, it means that Jed Lowry's not coming back, right? And that's a bummer. He had his best season last year. He made the All-Star team. He's a great presence in the clubhouse. I'm interested to see how that affects them now that this clubhouse is so good that they can probably, you know, they won't skip a beat. I would like to think so, or at least they would like to think so. But he is one hell of a presence for a quiet guy in that clubhouse. And he was a lead by example guy too, which I loved because they have so many young guys. And it's not just about what he does on the field in the games. It's how does he go about batting practice? How does he, you know, How does he handle the visiting clubhouse staff? It might sound like nothing to a lot of people out there, but there are, you know, nuances to being a big leaguer. And Jed was one of those guys that could teach all those young guys those nuances.
All right. Listen, there's no doubt that Jed had a great year, but what, 8 years younger?
Right.
And you get another year of control. He's in his second arb year. He's been hurt so much that he actually is only going into his second arb year. Mike Fiers is coming back, which I like.
I loved your tweet on the immediate aftermath of that. Yes. What was it? Good. Now, pitch him in a playoff game.
Yeah, now let him pitch in the playoffs. This is the A's rotation, which right now is an unmitigated disaster. Well, there's a little bit of mitigation now that Fiers is there. Fiers is basically your opening day starter. Remember, we have Sean Manaea out for the entire next season.
Wait, is it opening day or starting day now? Have we changed that?
Very nice semantics there.
Yeah, that's bad.
Mike Fiers is basically your only reliable starter. Daniel Mangdon. Then you have Frankie Montas and you have Chris Bassett. You have three guys that got sent down last year. A couple of them had bullpen stints.
Lizardo's going to win a spot, though, right?
Well, that's the thing about Jesus Lizardo. I would love to see him. You know, at this point, I saw him pitch the opening game for Stockton last year.
You mean the starting game for Stockton?
You're killing me. This is like when I say George Kittle, no relation, and then it always kills you. But I would love to see him make it. You've got guys coming off Tommy John like James Caprellian, A.J. Puck. That's going to take a while on those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's tremendous news that Kendall Graveman's out of the organization. I never saw. Every year in the bigs, his numbers got worse and worse and worse.
Puck, when's he expected back? Before the All-Star break, right?
Well, he had his Tommy John in spring training.
Right.
Right?
So typically 12 to 18?
It's usually 14 months somewhere in there. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say second half, but I think they would probably leave him in the PCL for a full year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably imagine. So you get back to the A's have an elite closer, an all-star closer in Blake Treinen, and then they add in Joachim Soria, which I think is a tremendous move because that's now the number one setup guy. And if you had asked me, would I rather have Soria or Familia? Familia came in with a bang, and then he got very, very shaky. And this is the guy who, of course, blew three saves in the World Series for the Mets.
And the Mets got him back, right?
Yeah. Welcome back. Well, that guy, Brody Van Wagenham, is an absolute maniac. That agent that's now the new GM in Long Island, that guy is absolutely ridiculous. But let's just get back to my point about the rotation right now. Because if they say, oh, it doesn't matter, we're just going with openers, I think we're in for a long season.
They wouldn't do that. You can't do that. Can you? I mean, you can.
They can do it
one time per turn of the rotation. You can't do it multiple times, right?
They tried to reinvent the wheel in the playoffs. They had this miracle season. They make the playoffs and they take not even one of their good relievers, a guy. And what did they get? Was it 8-8 when he started? And two batters in, it was 2-0. Now, the other thing is about that wild card game. And I said every time the A's have played the Yankees in their history, and I've seen everyone with my own eyes. The A's were always intimidated. And once again, and I'm sorry to say it, it's the fact the A's were scared out of their minds. That's why they didn't hit. So, yeah, I can say Liam Hendricks is the reason the A's lost, but also the A's were petrified.
Yeah.
And so I think now that they've got that out of their system, hopefully that's why I think, like, you know, we don't need Jed Lowry anymore to be an example because these guys have been here. Now maybe they can be the Chapmans and the Olsons. They can be the example. But right now, the other thing that scares me about the A's, Herbs, they're catchers. They don't really have a catcher. Their starter, well, they have Fegley, right? Their starter right now is Chris Herrmann, believe it or not. That's their starting catcher. Mm-hmm. So Sean Murphy, the number one catching prospect in their system and top five catching prospect in baseball. I mean, Chris Herrmann was a guy who was with Arizona 2 years ago. He was with Seattle last year. And, you know.
Who did Lucroy sign with?
LaCroix's still out there.
So why aren't they bringing him back?
Apparently, these are rumors now, apparently offered him 1 year for four. Last year, he made 1 year for six.
Mm.
So they're lowballing.
And had a good year.
He had a good year. Think about how he commanded that. Think about all the schmucks that pitched for the A's last year. Seriously. Just flat-out schmucks.
Schmuck.
There were some guys there that were good, but there were some flat-out double-A pitchers that were pitching for the A's last year. Think about how LaCroix handled that staff. And he would pop up with a nice hit now and then.
Yeah, and given that Melvin is a former catcher, you would think...
Well, he's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I know.
But how about this? Nice season. How about a pay cut?
Yeah, that's just – and it's such an important – look, catcher's an important position in every team, obviously. I'm not breaking any news. But when you have a mostly young and inexperienced staff, that's when having a guy like Lucroy really pays off no matter what he's giving you at the plate. It's almost like Buster in San Francisco. Buster's value right now to the Giants is not in the batter's box. It's behind the plate. That's where he's at his best and most productive.
Well, let's go around. This is going to sound a little bit better now. Obviously, you go around the infield. You have a gold glove at first base and also you have a platinum glove at third base in Chapman. Marcus Semien was actually in the final three for gold glove voting. He's your shortstop. Jerickson Profar now is your second baseman. So in the outfield, Ramon Laureano is your everyday center fielder, something that I didn't think I'd ever see. But Melvin always said, you know, it's like Piscotty and Wright. If you can hit both sides, we won't platoon you. Right. So you got Laureano in center, you got Piscotty and Wright. Now, as I said, it's still early. We're still in December. Left field right now, I'd probably be a platoon between Martini and Pinder at this point. That's not bad.
Zero Chris Davis. We're never going to see him in the outfield again?
Well, no, every now and then. But Chris Davis, by the way, same batting average 3 years in a row.
That's crazy.
And, of course, averaging over 100 ribbies and 40 mm-hmm. jacks. I would love to see him stay. And if they say things like, you know, we're trying to save money, that's why we didn't sign Lucroy, we're not signed. If they actually do sign, of course, they have all the money in the world. But right. If they actually do sign KD to just like a 3-year extension and say we use that money, I'd be quite happy with that.
Can we not call him KD? Confuses me.
Really? He's in the outside arena. The other KD's in the inside arena.
I mean, I think it's if you have the luxury of not having to throw him in the outfield, obviously that's the way you go. But yeah. He's awfully young to be locked into a DH role, but whatever.
Well, I mean, he took to it. There are some guys, yeah. You remember when
He took to it.
When Canseco would DH, he would suck.
Yeah.
He just wasn't into it. Mm-hmm. Some guys are like that. So just getting back to the hot stove, the A's have sort of made their moves. They need a catcher. They need another pitcher. But for the Giants now, Herbs, as you look at, if you run down the depth chart, as I was talking about, obviously we know Crawford's at short and Longoria's at third and Belt's at first and Panic right now is at second. You still have Panda. But that outfield right now, and they didn't, even last season, this 2017 season, they didn't get the memo that the ball was juiced. Everybody else was setting, you know, personal team records for home runs. Mm-hmm. And the Giants, they couldn't hit a home run to save their lives. So if you're Farhan Zaidi, do you say, look, I'm going to do what Luno and Epstein and, you know, I'm going to burn this thing to the ground? Or do you think Larry Bear is in his ear saying, we can't have a lost summer. We can't have a lost summer. Because I don't think Farhan takes the job if he's going to be answering to a guy in a suit. Your thoughts?
I totally agree. If he, look, when you're being interviewed for that job, you're basically asking the person that you've brought in for the interview, all right, what are you going to do when I give you the keys to the franchise? What exactly is your plan? And you have to be completely upfront, honest, bold, confident. And if he got the job after an interview in which he said, we got to burn this bad boy down, I don't think he's going to get any pushback. He would not have taken this job if he felt like he was going to get pushback on anything. He had to know that the buck stopped with him in terms of baseball decisions.
All right, we'll get to some text in the next segment. So if you'd like to text in, the Chilton Autobody text line is 95795. We're going to talk a little more baseball. We're also going to talk about just what in the hell is going on with the last ever Oakland Raider home game, where they're playing next year. The Niners are playing, Herbs, so we can talk a little silver and black. Tittle, Herbs, come on back. 95.7 again.
Now back to Urban and Tittle.
Thank you so much. Rick Tittle with you alongside Michael Urban. And it's time to talk sports as it always is on 95.7 The Game. And here's how you do it. You can throw your full body weight against the door. Probably not good. Security would be called. Or call us up toll free. 888-957-9570. Once again, 888-957-9570. And there's also the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. We'll catch up with Jovan Buha. Great name.
What is your address there?
He will join us in about a half hour. He covers the Clips for The Athletic. Remember, we are taking you to Warrior Warm-Up as the Warriors will take on the Clippers here at about 4 o'clock. But let's get to that Chilton Autobody text line, 95795.
See the one about Profar?
Yeah, read that one, would you?
I will. It is, there's five players last year hit 35 doubles, 20 homers, had 10 stolen bases in the American League. Five guys, 35 doubles, 10 homers, 20 homers, 10 stolen bases. Four of them finished in the top six in the MVP voting. Who was the other one? Jerickson Profar.
Wow. Very nice. 510 says, Jed will find his back somehow. I don't think so at this point.
Find his way back.
Joaquin, and Joaquin, of course, is at the UPS Center.
Is that Soria? Soria's texting us?
No, that's Joaquin. This is Joaquin.
Okay.
Yeah. So he says, can the A's realistically try for Dallas Keuchel?
No.
Listen, if you're an A's fan, you know that there's no... Dallas Keuchel rejected a qualifying offer of 17.9. That's what the A's give out for a three-year deal.
Yeah.
Not a one-year deal.
No, they offered Giambi to try to keep him.
Yeah, they're not... It's just... Listen, I would love to spend other people's money and...
Especially that guy's.
Well, especially the fifth, and they brag when they came in, the fifth richest ownership.
Yeah.
And this is billionaire with a B.
Doesn't mean anything if you're rich, if you're not going to spend it.
This whole thing, too, about the luxury tax, and I mean, the Red Sox were the only team that went over last year. Do you think they really are upset that they went over a few mil?
No, and I think we were having this conversation with Kolsky yesterday, and he disagreed with me. Shocking. It doesn't make any sense to me that you're going to have a salary cap, but you can go over it. You're going to have to pay a little extra, but it's not really a cap if you can go over it.
It's not a salary cap. They don't call it a salary cap. They call it a threshold. See, that's how the new CBA in the NFL, this isn't a practice. What is this? This is an organized team activity.
Right, right.
You know, Korea, you're at war. No, this is a police action. There's some lawyers will they'll coerce it and massage it with words. But think about this. The New York Yankees, since the luxury tax was introduced, this was 15 years ago, 2003. The Yankees have spent $340 million in penalties for going over.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they care? Do you think that they went cash poor? They went broke during those times? By the way, this threshold next season, Mike, is over 200, 206 million. Now, who had the third highest payroll in baseball last year? They're right down the street. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always, I always say about salary of obviously, it doesn't mean you're going to win, but it does show your ambition. Sometimes it shows your stupidity, but it does
most
of the time show your ambition. And it always irks me when A's fans say, hey, look how much wins we got for being cheap. You don't brag. If I buy a Mercedes and you buy a Yugo and your Yugo lasts longer, you don't brag that you were smarter.
Right.
It's just that you got lucky being cheap.
I don't know about lucky.
Yeah. Your car shouldn't last as long. What do you think?
Maybe if you did some research. I don't know a whole lot about
that.
I don't know how they put together the Yugo. Does the Yugo even exist anymore?
I don't think it does. The Yugo, by the way, was a car that came out of, this is when the Iron Curtain was still up, Yugoslavia. Or as Benny Hill called it, jug of saliva.
Yeah, and I think they were dangerous cars because the way they got their name is the prototype came rolling off and one guy says to the other, all right, give it a spin. He says, no, you go.
Ah, that's not bad. Do you know they couldn't sell the Chevy Nova in South America?
Why?
It literally means it doesn't go. Nova.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see backing away from that.
And Coca-Cola in... Indonesia literally means bite the wax tadpole.
You know a lot of stuff.
It just
doesn't mean anything.
You believe that?
It must be a hoot in a bar.
All right, here's the deal, Michael. We can either laugh or cry or be indifferent. And that is that the Raiders are going to be playing their last game at the Oakland Coliseum after moving back in 95 after 13 years in L.A. And it's been well known. I'm basically the only guy in the history of Bay Area radio to profusely say that I'm a lifelong Raider fan. And by the way, I met Cliff Branch again a couple of days ago.
was it at a memorabilia?
Yeah. I was at
gathering
a,
or something?
Yeah, I was at a mall and he's right there. And I didn't say, hey, I've interviewed you three times. Right. I didn't say who I was. I said, hey, I was at Super Bowl 15. He goes, You remember what happened? I go, that first touchdown you scored was right in my end zone. He goes, what about my second touchdown? And I panicked. I was like, and it was just, it killed me. I was like, wait, oh, that was the one. I go, wait, Kenny King with Bob Chandler blocking. He goes, yeah, that was the second one. Oh, he called.
Testing
I kind of choked.
Really?
Yeah, but he still liked
it. He still took the picture.
He did.
I've noticed you've got a go-to when you take pictures. You're pointing waist high.
Do you know who taught me that?
You're pointing with your left hand, pointing at the guy.
Do you know who taught me that? Jeff Ross.
Don't know who Jeff Ross
is. He's the Roastmeister General, the comedian. I took a picture with Jeff Ross years ago, because you know I love having the comedians on my syndication. And he put his arm around me, and he goes, this is the best way to take a picture. Just point at the other guy, then they won't look and see how ugly you are. And I go, oh, that's genius.
You called him a genius after he told you you were ugly.
No, he was talking about himself because he was pointing at me.
I think he's talking about
you. But yes, well, probably is. We work in radio, don't we? But this is the thing, Herbs, is that as, you know, we know they've been leaving. They're going to be going. We've known it for a while. Last weekend, I was, and I'm human, I was all of a sudden just beset with rage that this is actually happening. You know, because we kind of just pretend like it wasn't happening, and we kept going to games, right?
Right.
And I wanted to tweet the most profanity-laced, because the thing that kills me about at Mark Davis, but I luckily took the high road. That's not the classy thing to do. But it kills me how many, and I'll say it, idiots out there don't blame Mark Davis. Like, he had a gun to his head. And yeah, you can talk about different mayors and city officials and the A's, whatever, whoever you want to blame. Oh, it's the city of Oakland's fault. The fact of the matter is, no one is making him move.
Right.
This was his decision. He tried for LA first with the Chargers, didn't get it, and now he's going to Vegas. And Mark said himself, if you want someone to blame, blame me. Well, that's because it is his fault. And now this thing with AT&T Park or London, and London's not going to happen. But what an absolute mess this guy has made. And then he hires this coach for $100 million who comes in and burns the team to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You still have apologists saying that this is all good. So if you think this is not Mark Davis's fault, you are an idiot, because he does not have to leave. He does not. This is his decision. And I just wanted to make sure I got that out, Herbs.
Do you think Gruden got so much money because they had their, obviously, private conversation, and Mark basically said, I think we need to rip it all down, and my reputation, I don't want to take the bullets for it. So, I mean, right now, the casual fan looks at it and says, well, look what Gruden did. He traded Mac. He traded Amari. You know, it's all Gruden did this, Gruden did that. So he's taking all of the bullets for Mark. I wonder if that's why he was so richly compensated.
No. If Gruden wasn't there, Reggie and Mark would have paid Khalil. They wanted Khalil to stay. I firmly believe that. And okay. I remember at the press conference, this huge deal, and I was excited about it. And they didn't even, they had it in the practice facility in Alameda. They didn't even have it in their little amphitheater. It was so big. And I was sitting there with, it's funny, I was sitting next to Ibanez. I was talking to him about how huge it was. Every Raider that could make it from all the generations were there, from the Ottos to the Plunkets to the Woodsons were there.
Romo stopped calling the Niners we and switched back to the Raiders being we.
Oh, I remember Bob Melvin was there just playing clothes, and he came over and started talking to me and Townie because we're two guys he knows.
It was an event.
It was an event, and I got a question in, which I don't ask questions unless I think, you know, we really need to know the answer. Like, I'm not the guy at the press conference who says, boy, that grand slam, did you like that in the fourth inning?
Yeah.
What's he going to say? No, I wish you would have K'd.
Take me through that.
Leave the bases juiced.
What's going through your mind?
So I said, how is it? I said, this question is for both you and Reggie. How is this going to work with personnel decisions? Who has the final say?
Mm-hmm.
And back then, you know, Gruden's so charming. He's like a caricature of himself. The faces, the gesticulations, the histrionics, the arms way out like someone threw a sheep at him or something. And he's like, hey, this is going to be a collaborative effort.
Whoa. Someone threw a sheep at him?
Why does he do that with his hands out here?
Why a sheep?
I don't know. Pick a big farm animal. Animal?
How about a honey badger?
Now you think you'd have a defensive stance if someone.
Yeah, you're in trouble if someone's throwing honey badges
at you. Ask Harbaugh about that. So, but he said, "Oh, this is a collaborative effort, and I don't want yes men." And then look at Reggie. I'm not going to argue with Reggie. Look how big he is. Yeah, you know Reggie fired.
Gone.
Yeah, fired. So this dysfunction, this enormous mess they've made. And you still have these mindless minions who will take their marching orders and think, no, this is good. Like, oh, I can't believe we got a first round pick for Cooper. People think first round picks are these treasure chests of gold.
Yeah.
You know what they are? They're Gary and Conley's. They're DJ. Darius Hayward Bays. They're DeMarcus Van Dykes. I mean, first round pick doesn't mean the guy's going to be a star. And
a fourth round pick and a seventh round pick doesn't mean the guy's got a snowball's chance.
And this is something for the Niner fans out there too, who hope for losses so they can go from 7 to 6 in the draft. Or what a loser! You're a loser if you want your team to lose because the draft is such a crapshoot.
Right.
Look at Khalil Mack was 5. You know, it's like the Bills traded up to take Watkins at 4.
Dude, the Niners snapped an ungodly losing streak, an embarrassing losing streak, against their rival by beating the Seahawks last week, and there are Niner fans that were pissed.
See, that's what I'll never understand. You know what it is? They must be vampires.
A great win for them.
They must be vampires, and they're going to live forever. Ugh. You'll never get those 6 hours back, especially if you go to Levi Stadium. You'll never get those 11 hours back. The 3 hours down, the 3 hours back, the 1 hour. I mean, you'll never get those back.
And the sunburn.
And then you're gonna live forever, so you're gonna root for your team to lose. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors, and we will get in 1 hour from now at 4 o'clock to Warriors warm up, live coverage of the Clippers and the Dubs.
Good Lord, this show's flying by, Rick. I'm having the best time.
By the way, good for ball, bad for ball at the. I know Bill King hated this, but at the bottom of the hour. He always said there's no such thing as a bottom or a top of an hour.
Or a top, no?
Yeah.
I disagree.
Bottom of the clock, maybe you could say.